there. Welcome to Radio Out There. And this week we are going out there. Right out there. Several years ago, when I was doing Radio Nexus, which was based, of course, on the stories of Nexus magazine, for all of you Radio Nexus and former fans and Nexus readers. Several years ago, I went to a conference in Brisbane, the Nexus conference there, where I met Michael Horn. Michael Horn is the American media representative of a Swiss farmer by the name of Billy Meyer. Now, Billy Meyer is an extraordinary human being. Absolutely amazing. He's a one-armed, now a man in his 70s, farmer in Switzerland who has been contacted over the course of many decades now by a group of extraterrestrials who call themselves Pleiarans, and they say they come from the Pleiades system. They're not little green men, they're not little grey men. They're pretty much looking the way we are, really. Very good-looking sort of people. But anyway, over the years, Billy Meyer has put out their prophecies as a warning. They've come to him to spread the word. There's a very interesting reason why they've come to him, which we'll find out in this week's program. We're going to have a Billy Meyer special this week with Michael Horn. First of all, we're going to just catch up on that interview that I did with Michael Horn several years ago, after the conference, about a year after the conference, and that'll set the scene. After that, it's Michael Horn 2009, where we're going to just see where the whole Billy Meyer situation is. Billy Meyer is a simple man. He's not some kind of weirdo, he's not some kind of nutcase, from what I can gather. Is a man who's pretty straightforward. He's got a big bushy beard, but apart from that, he looks pretty much the same as anybody else, and he doesn't sort of carry on with a whole lot of nonsense. What he says does make a lot of sense, and he's been saying it over many, many years. The Billy Meyer contacts. They've been around for a while, as I said. Many of you may already have accessed them, especially through Michael Horn's website, theyfly.com. Meyer has written something like about 40, 45 books. There's also a new DVD out, which I'll be talking to Michael about as well. It's coming out by Reality Films and being released this week, actually, so it'll probably be out in DVD stores fairly soon. So I find the whole thing quite fascinating, and I just urge you to listen to everything with an open mind, as I urge you to listen to all of my guests and their opinions and whatever with an open mind. Be as questioning as you like, but please do it with an open mind. So now, first of all, let's meet Michael Horn several years ago as he appeared on Radio Nexus. Michael Horn has been associated with Billy Meyer for quite some time. In fact, he is the media representative in the United States for Billy Meyer, and he's, let me quote from the Nexus edition which covered his story a couple of years back there. He's the authorized American media representative for the Billy Meyer contacts and has researched the case for over 25 years. Michael's a lecturer, writer, and frequent guest on radio and television, and he was at the 2005 Nexus conference last year, which was where I first caught up with him. Michael, good to catch up with you. We haven't seen each other since the Nexus conference last year.
Indeed, Barry, indeed. That was a thrill to be at that event. I love Australia.
Now, what's been happening, because it's virtually 12 months since I caught up with you, and we had a chat about the Billy Meyer contacts. You gave a talk at the conference and whatever. So what's been happening? Where have you been in that time?
Well, let's see, in all that time, of course, I went to Switzerland earlier this year as well and visited with Billy, and we've been very active in terms of some other information coming forward, as well as earlier this year, I guess it was in about, February, March, somewhere in there, we had the International UFO Congress, and Wendell Stevens, who's the original lead investigator on the Meyer case, and Christian Frenner, who is a Swiss man who's been involved for over 20 years in Switzerland, along with me, we made presentations at the International UFO Congress, and I think they were very, very interesting, especially Wendell's and Christian's, to me, because I've known Wendell for many years, and this was the first full-on presentation I'd seen of his in some time, and he told a lot of stories that even pertained to the CIA observation and surveillance, not only of Meyer and his people, but of Wendell Stevens and the two primary investigators, Lee and Britt Elders, and then Christian Frenner shared more information about other people who had not only seen the ships, but had taken photographs of them, and so all of that came out on a DVD set, so we've been promoting that for people who weren't at the Congress. There's been a lot going on, and the ongoing battles with skeptics and things like that.
Well, there's always going to be that, isn't there? Unfortunately, skeptics these days aren't like the old Greeks. You know, they don't go in there with an open mind. They go in there with a very closed mind.
Closed mind, unscientific.
Yeah.
Unscientific. The conclusion is made, and then they try to fit the evidence to the conclusion. You know, and in the Meyer case, people have a lot of trouble doing that because, by golly, it just doesn't fall in with their skepticism. So there have actually been a couple people who tried to duplicate Meyer's photos and failed miserably, and were very grumpy about it, too, I might add.
Now, for the sake of our audience, why don't we just do a quick thumbnail sketch, because I think the last story that came through in Nexus was back in August, September 2004, so it's just on a couple of years ago now, when your story, Prophecies from the Billy Meyer Contacts, were there.
Sure.
He's in touch, basically, with Pleiaren contacts.
That's right. His main contact people, though not the only people he's met with, are known as the Pleiaren people, formerly known as, or the ETs formerly known as Pleiadians. And Meyer actually, in this case, was the man who coined that word Pleiadians back in 1975. Mm. And they did that as a deliberate kind of a trick on all the people who would, you know, follow Meyer saying, oh, I'm in touch with Pleiadians, and I'm, a contactee, and I'm dating one of their women from outer space, and blah, blah, blah. So in 1995, when they officially left and abandoned their Earth bases, they told Meyer that he could now just simply, you know, spill the beans and let people know that there are no Pleiadians, that they are known as Pleiaren, and, you know, that was their joke.
Yeah, fair enough. But the contact has brought forward some very interesting predictions and prophecies, and we actually talked about the difference between prediction and prophecy before, didn't we? A lot of people get them mixed up.
Yes, Barry. Just as a refresher for the people that didn't hear our conversation, perhaps, prophecy, in terms of this information, prophecy simply means those events, and usually negative, they're warnings, we don't need to be warned about good things, those negative events that will occur if human beings do not change their actions and their thinking. These events, as prophecies, can still be changed if we act in time.
Yeah.
However, of course, predictions are defined as specific events that will occur with certainty and cannot be altered. That means they are usually either events of a, you know, cosmic or natural nature, you know, an asteroid or meteor flying by or what have you, or something to do with the planet's own, volcanic eruptions or what have you. Or it means that they are events that were formerly referred to as prophecies, but have gone past the point of no return.
Yeah, that's exactly it, isn't it? Past the point of no return.
Yes.
But prophecies still can be altered, and they're basically a warning. So.
And most of what we're being warned about is still, to some degree, alterable, at least according to the sources in this case.
Mm.
But one of the things that we didn't talk about at the time, because it had not yet happened, this is a kind of, you know, I call it a pretty convincing bit of proof. We have this information for free on the website. People can check it. But in 1981 and in 1987, Meyer published information warning of riots in Paris, arson, you know, looting, even murder, tremendous unrest. Now, to be perfectly honest, they foretold Paris will fall. Now, I don't know if they meant it would have to happen at that time, but they foretold this rioting, arson, etc., and said that it would specifically be related to inhabitants who were of the Islamic faith. In October, November of last year, after the conference, that's which is why you and I weren't talking about this yet, those riots, or at least riots in Paris, with arson, looting, there were a couple of deaths, lots of cars burned, etc., and connected directly to primarily the Islamic inhabitants of the neighborhoods there, did sweep not only into Paris, but I think into many other cities.
Yep.
And we know that occurred. Now, if people say, well, you know, you're saying that now, how do we know Meyer really, you know, predicted that? Well, I, of course, can say that I read that material, but even more importantly, I put that information on the DVD, The Meyer Contacts, which was released in, I think it was in February of 2004, a year and a half before the riots occurred.
Yeah. So when did he actually make the prediction?
1981 and again in 1987. They mentioned it both in both of those years. And it was very specific. You know, they talked about Paris, the riots, Islamic.
And did they say it was going to be in the new millennium or what?
They didn't give dates on that. And sometimes on things that are, you know, maybe on the prediction level, we could say that may well have been a prediction. They did certainly occur. But certain things they don't give timelines for because they say human beings are funny. We will try to interfere with an event if we know when it's going to occur, which only would make it dramatically worse if it has to occur based on cause and effect. So they say, we'll tell you these things are going to occur in the hope that you will correct your actions in time to prevent the outcome.
That's right. So even if it was you knew the time, you might maybe circumvent it then, but it doesn't mean it's not going to happen 6 months or a year later either.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So we had this, you know, kind of noted, and there's other things, of course, that they've been warning you for a long time, especially pertaining to the Middle East. And this is, you know, very controversial and very difficult information because, especially for people that are living in Israel and, you know, Palestine, Iraq, etc. But they've been warning about this for decades. And I should also note that when you and I, you know, did meet last year, we had not yet put up on the website a link to the translation of Meyer's predictions from 1958, which, among other things, specifically foretold two U.S. wars with Iraq. The second one would lead to, quote-unquote, an unbelievable disaster. So this stuff is there. Meyer had sent that around to the 25 European nations. There's well over 100 specific predictions wherein he did give the dates of various moon landings. He foretold the AIDS epidemic, the coming of plastic credit cards, the crystal meth epidemic, terrorism, very specifically computers in people's homes. Specifically, nothing allegorical or mystical, spelled it out, and nobody responded to the first circulation of this.
This is the trouble, though, isn't it, Michael? When somebody comes out with information like this, and it's almost in the Jules Verne realm, you get dismissed as being, oh, just another religious crackpot or a UFO nut or whatever. The authorities dismiss you.
Exactly, and what I try to point out to people in the Meyer case is you don't have to believe it, and before you simply ridicule it, why not go and take a look? And sure, I've got a ton of stuff that's really great research material, DVDs and videos and all that, but I did something else, which I will always do, and I maintain a website with volumes of free information for people that simply want to go and see, hey, what's in this case? Is there anything to this? And can I give the website?
Yeah, of course you can. We'll put it up on the front page as well.
Oh, great. The website is simply called TheyFly, TheyFly.com.
It's a great website title, actually. I love it.
It's actually a shortened version from And Yet They Fly, but we figured They Fly would do it.
Yeah, I reckon.
You know, we want people to be able to go dig in and not feel like, oh, you have to pay to get into this website. No, I got a bunch of juicy stuff if you want it. I'm really glad because you'll be glad you have it. But you know what? You can spend hours reading the material here, direct translations. We have links to sites and forums and everything. So this is so that people will really try and figure this out for themselves. And if they do, then I think we're going to start to find a lot of people waking up.
You're listening to Radio Out There, and we'll meet Michael Horn 2009 very soon. But I wanted to play that whole, or part of that interview anyway, so that you can get a bit of a handle on not only Michael, but also the very enigmatic Billy Meyer. Before we do that, though, looking back over the years, UFOs, so-called aliens, extraterrestrials, whatever you like to call them, have been around for a long time. In his book Strange and Mysterious Anomalies, Ian Ross Vairo talks about a whole lot of evidence that he sees from the Bible, from Sumerian, from Egyptian carvings, all sorts of things over the years. And if you can get a hold of a copy of the book, you can see for yourself that it even refers to various things in the Christian Bible there. So drawing on that, Ian says it seems that EBEs, as he refers to extraterrestrial biological entities, are now confirming to American military intelligence what the Sumerians tried to tell us thousands of years ago. And it's reassuring that the American president was briefed on this, as he talked about before in his book there, because he says there remains to this day a belief that President Eisenhower met with extraterrestrials in February 1954, at Muroc Field, which is now the Edwards Air Force Base. And this belief is kept alive by a very convincing letter from General Light to Meade Lane, the then director of Borderland Sciences Research Associates. And the letter alleges that a meeting with ETs took place. And General Light, or Gerald Light at least, claims that he was part of a delegation of community leaders to be invited to this meeting. Sounds very much like several movie scripts that we've seen. UFOs in Ancient Records, just part of Ian Ross Vairo's book, Strange and Mysterious Anomalies, Myths, Conspiracies, Discrepancies, Out-of-Place Objects, Unexplained Things That Surround Us in This Planet, where we turn around and half the time, or more than half the time, shrug our shoulders and say, oh, well, yeah, maybe somebody will explain that someday. In the meantime, I've got to pay the mortgage. Well, read the book instead. Strange and Mysterious Anomalies. Truth is strange, but truth is always strange, stranger than fiction if it could be told, according to Lord Byron. And Strange and Mysterious Anomalies is available through Joshua Books, and you can get onto their website and order a copy or just read about it. Ian Ross Vairo, Strange and Mysterious Anomalies, joshuabooks.com. Now, Ian was going to be a guest on this week's program, but he's not suffering from the best of health at the present stage, so hopefully we'll be able to get him onto the program to have a chat about various things, and maybe on this topic as well, in a week or two, as soon as he gets his health back again. But don't forget, joshuabooks.com. And you're listening to Radio Out There. So now, 2009, we have Michael Horn sitting in California, Barry Eaton sitting in the studio in Sydney, Australia, and linked by telephone. And away we go. Michael, good to catch up with you again. It's been a couple of years.
Yes, thank you, Barry. It certainly has.
Now, we first connected at the radio, at the Nexus conference about 4 or 5 years back, and in this program I've already played a little bit of one of the chats that we had. But your association with Billy Meier, that has continued in the last few years, unabated, I gather?
Yes, quite so. I've been to Switzerland about 11 times in the past 10 years, and I, you know, continue to do the work of bringing whatever information I possibly can about the case to the public, writing articles myself, doing interviews, live presentations, fighting with skeptics, all sorts of fun.
Fighting with skeptics. Do you really bother with skeptics?
Well, I actually do. I'll tell you, one of the things about that is it's been, in my opinion, something necessary to do starting almost 10 years ago, because the skeptics had gone pretty much unchallenged for many, many years. They were just laying it on and jumping on the Meier case. It's a hoax. It's a fake. It's this and that.
Yeah, sure.
So I went out and I directly challenged them. And one group accepted the challenge to try to duplicate one of Meier's photos and films. Naturally, they couldn't duplicate his photos, and they didn't even try after all these years, since 2001.
Is that the one with the flying disc in front of the tree?
Oh, yeah, they couldn't duplicate that at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it took them about 3 years, and they came up with photos of little UFO models in the sky, which, you know, they said, well, this duplicates the effect. I said, no, that's silly. You know, you can duplicate the effect with a sci-fi movie. We're talking about duplicate. Take your pictures, take your photos, and have them subjected to the same standards of testing that Meier's were, and of course they wouldn't do that because they knew theirs weren't real.
And of course, you know, there was no such thing as digital photography or Photoshop or any kind of digital enhancement in those days.
Absolutely. And, you know, the special effects experts from a company called Uncharted Territory, they won the Academy Award for doing special effects for Independence Day.
Mm.
And they looked at Meier's stuff and they said, those are not models. And these guys are skeptics about UFOs, but they said, those aren't models. We'd have to go to CGI to duplicate it. The one film of the craft going around the tree, they said, well, that's, not only would that be hard, it'd probably be impossible to fake that shot.
Mm.
So the skeptics have taken pretty much a beating. They don't know when they're done, but they're done. And to be honest with you, the people who've done the most damage to ufology as a whole, and specifically to the Meier case, since I claim it is really the only verifiable, authentic UFO contact case, you know, that we can really prove, the people who are the biggest enemies of that are the UFO community.
Oh,
they
really?
Retard progress on all this stuff more than one can imagine.
Why?
Well, the bottom line is envy and a desire to gain prominence in a field in which, unfortunately, there are few standards. There is it's rife with speculation. Everybody that sees or takes a blurry photograph of a light in the sky or wants to talk about same suddenly has a platform on which to pontificate and make outrageous, nonsensical claims that they simply cannot back up.
Mm.
Chief among the people that make these noises to the detriment of, certainly of the Meier case, and what I consider to be the truth about the matter, you know, I'm an opinionated fellow, truth among those people are the ones that call themselves exopolitics, others in the Disclosure Project or PRG, because they all deliberately either outright ignore, suppress, or try to marginalize the Meier case. I mean, literally. I've had conversations with people who say, well, we know it's real, but we don't want it to come out now, you know, because we're doing this other thing. And I'm going, with what, you know?
Mm.
There is nothing out there that people can actually take to the bank except by giving silly lectures. They can't bring home the goods on it because there's no significant content anywhere. And even with all the photos that, or films that may currently be taken of UFOs, it doesn't mean they're extraterrestrial. And this is another huge part of it. So the biggest disinformation, the biggest amount of opposition, suppression of truth, I lay that squarely at the UFO community.
Okay, Michael, so what do you tell the skeptics then when they come up with this that makes the Billy Meier communications and contacts with extraterrestrials? What is it that you're able to provide that others can't?
Well, certainly with the physical evidence, we have four or five categories of actually still irreproducible physical evidence. That means with the material available to Billy Meier, starting in 1964, not just 75, from 64 to about 1980, he produced well over 1,200 clear daytime photos of up to four of the UFOs, eight films, a video, four different sound recordings, metal alloy samples that were turned over, and some of all of this was, you know, put in for evaluation and testing. There is nothing that the skeptics can really do to debunk a photograph that passes all of the standards of testing of a real large object a distance from the camera. And recently, we put up on my site something that is so conclusive and so obvious that I'm actually sorry we didn't do it earlier. And it pertains to what's called the sunlight UFO. And that's a famous photo of Meier's where one of the UFOs is right next to a big barren branch tree in late winter with the sun glinting off the UFO. Surrounding this are the tops or parts of another four of these barren branch trees. Now, the skeptics want to try and tell us Meier used model trees and model UFOs. Well, clearly, there are no model trees that are barren branch that you can stick on a hillside. It's preposterous. However, the coup de grace here is that we actually have film from 1985 when another production was done by Genesis 3 of Meier and a Japanese film director walking up the hill to these exact same trees. It looks like springtime or summer when the trees are now full with leaves. The same mountains in the background, the same trees surrounding it. And it's obvious that they're standing right next to what appears to be at least a 40-foot tree, and that there's no way that Meier, you know, faked the shot. And it's shut up a lot of people, but the skeptics are so invested in being right, not in finding out what the truth is, that they, you know, they're stubborn. But at this point, their voices are really very, very small.
Well, this is a very good point you make. And, I mean, this is not a skeptic bashing session because everybody's entitled to be skeptical and not naive and just accept anything that's told to them. That's not the purpose of the original order of the skeptics that goes back to ancient Greece. You know, it is to question, to challenge, but with an open mind, not to say, I am right, you are wrong, you prove. And even if you do prove it, I know I'm right anyway, so go to hell.
Yeah.
That, unfortunately, is the attitude, isn't it?
It is, and you're exactly right about that, because, look, I'm skeptical about a lot of things.
Sure, me too.
So you have to be if you're intelligent, and I don't tell the people that you shouldn't be skeptical. I just say, look, when you have a man with one arm who lives in rugged rural area of Switzerland, who is the producer or presenter of 1,200 clear daytime UFO photos, eight films, a video, sound recordings, 25,000 pages of information, including volumes of specific, prophetically accurate, scientific, and world event-related information that he could have no means of producing, finding, publishing otherwise. When all of that is laid at your feet, instead of trying to make isolated, well, he could have read that in an issue of the New York Times in 1974 that was strictly in English on a back page. So, you know, they literally try to do that, and it just shows me that this is a level of ignorance and stupidity. Instead of saying, well, wait a minute, you are presenting us with quite a problem here logically. Logically, how does one man do all this? Because I don't know anybody that's done any of it, let alone one person that's done all of it. So honesty would require people to set aside their know-it-all attitudes and go, how is this possible? Let's look more deeply into this. Let's talk to these witnesses. How is it that there's a woman who was a UN diplomat for 14 years that is an eyewitness to this in India and to this day, you know, 30-something years later, steadfastly remains, yes, I saw this. Yes, this woman did walk with this man, Billy Meier, on the grounds of this ashram in India where my grandfather was the head teacher. Yes, we all saw her. We saw the eight UFOs. And this woman, my friend saw it too, and everybody in the village. And it's written up in a 1964 New Delhi Statesman a newspaper article, but no, I'm a skeptic and I know better, and everybody must be lying just to try to fool me. And that's basically,
right.
They're very immature people. It's a very strange thing.
Yeah, it is. I guess one of the questions that you get asked a lot by skeptics, by many different people, is why a one-armed man in the outreaches of Switzerland? Why has he been contacted? Why has he been given all this information? And why not somebody who might have the influence to spread the word a lot better?
Well, I'll start with the end of that and say this, that most people who would be in a position of prominence, A, would not probably want to get involved in this type of thing because the immediate threat to their lives, to their sanity, to their families, everything would be something they wouldn't sign on for, let alone if they could actually handle the reality themselves. We think, we talk about UFOs and extraterrestrials, of course, as, many people, we accept the idea, of course, this exists. This is something that is outside of our paradigm in reality, and we are having this slowly percolated through the mass consciousness for a future time. This is not going to bear fruit in terms of contact with ETs in our lifetimes. And so I'll back it up and answer about why Billy. Now, this is simply based on the information of the case, and I'm not telling you that this is true. I'm just telling you this is the information. According to this information, reincarnation is a fact of life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something, as it is for us here, we either believe it or we don't believe it, but we have no means of knowing for sure. According to the information in this case, these people, these alleged extraterrestrials, know, as does Meyer, that reincarnation is a fact of life and that the part of us that reincarnates is called the human spirit, separate from what we commonly refer to as the soul. The human spirit, they say, is an actually immortal part of each and every single human being on this world and anywhere else where humans exist. It is placed, it resides deep in the center of the brain, and it does not have a personality. It's not involved in the way we may think, and when we think, well, we're being spiritual or we're studying spiritual things. It functions differently. There's a lot of written about that. I'm not going to try to go into it. People can read about that. Suffice it to say that this immortal part of us is the element that reincarnates, according to them, millions upon millions of times in the course of evolution, and it draws to it when it first goes in and incarnates in the embryo, turning it into a fetus at 21 days. It starts then to draw to it information from previous lifetimes, and it starts also to begin the very, very, very first process of forming consciousness and personality and all that, which will really happen more outside the womb. In the case of Meyer, what we're told in this case is that Meyer's spirit has done this gig, if you will, at least six other times in human history on this planet. That is, has performed the role of a prophet, which is really essentially what he is, and it has the requisite abilities, if you will, experience as an ancient spirit to once again, when it would reincarnate, for that person in whom it would reincarnate to be educated and for this possibility to be reintroduced again in this lifetime. There have been many lifetimes that the spirit has had where it was not being a prophet, it was just incarnating and doing other things like everybody. So the answer to your question is they claim that this particular spirit was specifically chosen because of its past incarnations as other personages that we would know of, and it incarnates in a young Swiss baby, and at the 5 years of age, the Swiss boy, the child, is contacted for the first time by one of the extraterrestrials.
Hmm. Has Billy been able to, in your knowledge, able to access any of these subconscious past life memories as a prophet?
Well, he has access not only to that, but to what's called the spirit banks or storage banks, where the information from past personalities is stored, and which, if someone has extremely highly developed spiritual abilities, for the most part, then they can deliberately, consciously penetrate into the storage bank for information.
So we're talking about something that's known as the Akashic Records?
Well, that's the misnomer. Apparently, that's a term, from what I understand, that Rudolf Steiner created, and in Switzerland they've said he's not exactly on it, and people think that's what it is. They refer to it as the storage banks, usually.
There are many names. I've heard it referred to as the Hall of Records and many different. I guess they're all labels anyway, aren't they?
Yeah, and the idea would be that basically there is an etheric level that has all information about any and everything ever said, felt, thought, done by any, you know, and that Meyer is able to access
them.
Information.
Yeah, yeah.
And also he was taken back in time to meet at least one of these personalities.
Oh, right. Okay, fair enough. Look, we might just take a little break here, Michael. Just hang on there and we'll be back to you in just a few moments. There are so many fascinating things we can talk about here. My special guest is Michael Horn, talking about the amazing man Billy Meyer, and we'll be back very shortly. You're listening to Radio Out There. Soleil, in the sun, and it features a group called Blue Beat. Another couple of books to have a look at in the Joshua Books catalogue, Chemical Free Kids. We're talking about some of the prophecies of Billy Meyer, saying how they tell us we've got to look after the environment. Well, this certainly continues on that theme. Do you think you'd be using your current personal care products on your children if you knew they contained harmful and hazardous chemicals? Well, we do. There are over 100,000 synthetic chemicals available on the market, and they're in everything from shampoo to hair dye, nail polish, moisturizer, hairspray, food, water, toys over the counter, and prescription drugs, cleaning products. Ah, look, the list goes on and on. It's quite frightening. read the book for yourself and just work out how you might be able to sort your life out a little bit better. Chemical Free Kids by Dr. Sarah Lance, Raising Healthy Children in a Toxic World. And that is just one of the many books available on Joshua Books. They're publishers to the world, and so many of their books are just not available in bookstores. Have a look at the website, joshuabooks.com, for a whole variety of subjects, from alternative health through to alternative practices and all the mind, body, spirit topics. joshuabooks.com. And you're listening to Radio Out There. And now let's take the final part of our chat with Michael Horn. Michael, is Billy still being contacted by the Pleiarans?
Yes, to the best of my knowledge, on a fairly regular basis still. For the most part, the contacts are basically for him, as opposed to being information intended to be disseminated to us about coming events and things like that. And part of the reason for that is, unfortunately, they determined that humanity as a whole doesn't learn from prophecies and predictions. And so they said, look, you know, from here on, while we may tell you about some things that you could publish for, you know, others, most of our contacts will simply be for, you know, purposes that are important to us and to you. And they continue to this day.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, you talked about before the difference between a prophecy and a prediction. At least a prophecy can be changed. We've got some responsibility in that one. So they're turning around and now saying that, okay, we've given you all these little warnings, but nobody takes any notice.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's exactly what they're saying.
But doesn't that get back to my point before? Okay, Billy may have done this in several lifetimes before, but this is an era of high communications. It's an era of, you know, everything. Well, when I first contacted him, there was no internet or whatever about, but
right.
Communications at this point in our civilization, or recorded civilization, are the most sophisticated ever. Does that perhaps suggest that either they picked the wrong person, or Billy has not been able to get the word out the way they wanted them to, or how does it come across to you?
Well, what I would say part of the answer is this. Ever since Meyer started to become somewhat even publicly known, he became under immediate surveillance from the CIA, Swiss intelligence, and other elements.
Exactly, my point about communications and everything like this, yeah.
I'm sorry?
That's exactly my point. You know, communications are so incredibly sophisticated these days.
Yes, and they, for instance, the intelligence agencies used to use the military base that is just up the hill from where Meyer lives. I've driven past it many, many times when I've had the pleasure of being over there. And I was talking to Billy about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. I said, is the CIA still up the hill? And he says, oh, no. They moved farther away. Their equipment is so sophisticated, they don't have to be that close anymore. Oh, yes, they still surveil us, but I don't know why they don't come and knock on the door. We don't have any secrets. We'll tell them what they if they have questions, we'll answer them for them. And the thing is this. It is the most suppressed story in all of human history, and that includes to this day. Now, I'm not kidding about that. Think about this. If what I'm saying here is possibly true, that there is a man who for the past 67-plus years has been meeting face-to-face with extraterrestrial humans, he's photographed, filmed, and videoed their ships, recorded the sounds, been given metal alloy samples, published accurate prophecies and predictions from them, has over 100 witnesses, different people, even a Swiss skeptic photographed the UFOs, and it kind of, you know, blew his whole thing. If this is true, why doesn't the world know about it unless there's a very deliberate and concerted effort to make sure that the information only goes so far or that it gets debunked, attacked, ridiculed, marginalized in any way possible? Unfortunately, as I mentioned before, and I state not with all certainty, with the cooperation of the UFO community.
Now, okay, so does this suggest then that no matter who was given this information, it would still happen? So even if it was somebody
of great
influence who decided to get onto the bandwagon?
Mm-hmm. But the thing is, that is, I think, quite an accurate statement, that it would have been difficult for anybody, and no matter what level they were at, if they were in a very high and prominent level with great access to the media, their lives would probably be drastically shortened.
Maybe they should have got in touch with Rupert Murdoch.
Except that his, let's say the way I perceive him is his agenda is not one that is, necessarily focused, prioritizing the overall good of humankind. I think whatever, makes him a dollar, that's another matter. Those two things don't have to be mutually self-contradictory, but we don't have too many examples of where, there's some examples, people that do very good things with their power and their money. Now, with Meyer, you have to understand that this whole thing, when there have been 21 attempts in his life, people have tried to kidnap his kids, he's had grief, of an immense amount, personal grief in his life. It takes an enormous, enormous amount of will, character, integrity, determination to not fold, to not collapse. And believe me, when you read the transcripts, you'll find throughout there are times when Meyer was ready to give it up, or the player and said, look, we're going to probably have to withdraw from this. And, they criticized him at times for not doing enough, what have you. Other times they said, how come this isn't happening and that. And I think that it's recognized now, certainly, that this world is primarily run by power interests, corporate banks, military, industrial, religious, what have you, that have control as their main priority and profit. Mm. That's their agenda. They're not really concerned with truth coming out that would liberate people so enormously that there would be no longer any, control over them. And that is, the antithesis of what's necessary here. In my opinion, I'll just say one more thing on this long-winded part of my answer here. I think that the so-called real powers that be in this got together and they said, okay, we've got one more shot at this profit for Earth. We didn't do well with the charismatic, powerful guys that ended up getting persecuted, nailed to crosses, whatever. How about this time we get a guy who, by the time the world, such as it is, discovers him, will be a middle-aged, gray-bearded, pot-bellied, one-armed farmer with, no particular charisma. Maybe we can slip it in that way. And I think that's pretty much what they kind of foresaw.
So in other words, you're saying that you feel that they have interceded, shall we say, in previous times with previous prophets, and that hasn't worked.
Yes. There were at least six other prophets, from what I understand, all of whom were connected to an extraterrestrial mission, basically by the same people for the same purpose, with the same information, the same teaching. It's not like they've got something particularly new to tell us. I mean, there may be specific events that we're being forewarned about, but the core of the case, the core of the teaching, the core for humanity has remained the same for thousands of years. The problem is, in the past many thousands of years, few people other than maybe the prophet or a scribe he had could write. And the organized religions that came into being and that were in place could co-opt the information and turn it into its own fodder, and this happened time and time again. Mm. People, for some reason, there's a human tendency with a lot of people to want to deny others truth and freedom and happiness if they can profit by it.
I was going to say, I mean, this whole thing about the world being run by the powerful, there's nothing new about that. That's been going on since we crawled out of the caves. The bloke with the biggest club took over.
Yeah, and it doesn't, I mean, it's, we're so used to that, unfortunately. And, along the lines of this being suppressed, I'll give you this funny little example. Perhaps you know of an American TV personality known as Larry King.
Oh, yes.
He has a huge, right?
Yeah.
And, like last year, he had maybe six shows on UFOs.
Yeah, he did.
Well, I was getting people writing me and calling me, why aren't you on the Larry King show? I said, ask him. So people started calling the Larry King show and writing it. And one day my phone rang, and it was the producer from the Larry King show. And you know what she told me?
No.
She said, tell all those people to stop bothering us to have you on. If we want to do this story, we'll call you. Honest to goodness. And I was really surprised. And about a week later, when I composed myself, I wrote her an email. And I said, as I understand media and news, when you get the public demanding and expressing interest in something, that's usually a good lead to follow, and you do the story. But the problem is, here, Barry.
Yeah.
Once you start to look at the Billy Meyer case, it's like pulling a thread on a sweater. Everything unravels, and they don't want that to happen.
Well, I also heard from other sources that Larry King did go out on a limb, a personal limb, to even do those other programs there, that the powers that be in the network really weren't very happy about the whole thing. So perhaps, you know, he's only on a short leash.
No, and I heard this from other people in TV. They said, no, you have to understand that. Larry King doesn't even care about UFOs. It's ratings. And periodically, so it's not like he threatened the networks by doing these shows. Believe me, those shows would not be on if they weren't going to be sure that they would go a certain way. So what do they have on? And there's some good people that they brought on. I mean, I even corresponded with a couple guys. I forget the names right now. And, they're very earnest about what they're trying to do. But they can't go anywhere with this information. Mm. They can't produce any real evidence, any uniquely valuable information. They can only talk about a crash from X number of years ago, a report from somebody who saw this, or the pilot said it was as big as, a schoolhouse flying by. But so what? If there are UFOs piloted by intelligent extraterrestrials, there's a reason that they're showing up in our skies, and there's certainly a reason why the Meyer contacts are happening if they're real.
Perhaps part of the reason may well be that Billy doesn't speak English, and television isn't,
well,
good television doesn't involve translators.
Well, here's the thing. Billy has done interviews in English, and when I go to see him, he makes me speak more and more German, which my German I always have to work on because I don't practice it when I'm not in Switzerland, so
yeah.
I'm a little bit of, retarded with that. But Billy has done interviews in English, but at this stage of his life and with the information he wants to convey, he feels better about putting it out in German. But there's one other thing. He won't do any more interviews. He's not interested in it at all. I've had some people in just recently contact me, and some other people, there's a Project Camelot people, they wanted to interview him. I said, okay, talk to this person. He didn't want to do it.
Mm.
And they thought I was blocking it. I said, no. And his answer usually is, well, for English, I have, authorized Michael Horn to speak for me. Okay, that's not as glamorous as Billy Meyer, the actual contactee. But this is what I do. And it's not about personality. Billy is just another human being, and he is a great guy, but ultimately, it's not about him. It's about what he's brought forth for humanity.
Exactly.
And it will survive all of us by centuries. And it will be studied. If what they're saying is true, this material is going to be most deeply studied over the next 700 years.
Hmm. That's an interesting thought.
It's pretty strange, but what they say.
Now, getting back to the people that Billy has been contacted by and communicated with. We're not talking about little green men with a horn on top of their head or the Greys or anybody like that. We're talking about essentially people who look and appear just the same as us.
Very much so. Now, he has met with people who, do look a little different, a little shorter, maybe some other skin colors. But he's met with people who we would describe as Caucasian, Middle European, Black, Asian, and variations, on that, including a couple who are kind of a light greenish color. They are the ones who put their hands on some of the cars in Switzerland at the center there and left their seven-fingered handprints and arm prints even indelibly etched into the finish of the cars.
Wow, seven fingers. That's an interesting
one. Seven fingers. Uh-huh. So there's all sorts of fun stuff that goes on, and Billy's met some very interesting people, but they are a very, when you read, see, the beauty of reading his conversations with them, especially when they are, you might even say, more mundane, you get a sense of the strength of purpose, not only of the contacts in Billy, but of these people, how they speak, how they phrase things. They are very logical. They are precise. They don't express anything to do with beliefs whatsoever. They say they either know something or don't. If they make a mistake, they acknowledge it, and they have. There's been, not a lot, but they claim they've made a few. So it's a very different level of communicating and clarity and directness than we are generally used to in our everyday discourses with each other.
So are they communicating by speech or by thought or what?
Well, Meyer does receive telepathic messages from them, usually when it's how can I put it, when they want to let him know that something is coming, that they want to have a face-to-face contact with him. But the contacts are face-to-face, and some of the people speak to him directly. They have learned Swiss German. Others speak to him through translation devices, so they hear each other in their respective languages.
Mm-hmm.
So Billy can speak Swiss German to someone who doesn't speak it, and he hears it in whatever the tongue is, you know, the player, and
mm-hmm.
speak amongst themselves.
But in the film that you've made, the DVD that mm-hmm. you've made, he did say that German is a wonderful language to be able to speak in because it's so precise.
Exactly. Now, I know, you know, some people feel this way or that way about it, but they do claim that of all the terrestrial languages, it is the best suited to convey specific, precise
mm.
information and meaning, and especially for the spiritual teaching, because they also say many of the words that exist in German do not exist at all, even in English. They have to kind of cobble together the meaning,
yeah.
and that English is deficient in many ways.
Okay, well, that puts us in our place, doesn't it? Now, the prophecies that, I mean, they came out a long time ago, and they came out for a while, and we've seen quite a few of them that have come true, particularly in recent years with all the epidemics, the conflicts, the disasters, the various things that were forecast from, well, the current epidemic, I guess, when you're looking at swine flu and various other things like this has been forecast, along with some natural disasters. Are there any more prophecies or predictions that are still on the list that we've got to keep an eye out for?
Well, yeah, actually, you know, on my website, there's a letter that Meyer sent around in 1958. And I think he has somewhere around 160 specific things that he mentions in there. And he did, at that time, he foretold two U.S. wars with Iraq, the second one under a president who'd be the son of a former president. He named AIDS by name as a coming epidemic, plastic credit cards, people would carry telephones on them, homes would be equipped with televisions and computers, which would be interconnected electronically around the world, 1958, and dozens of other things. Some of the things are a little bit heavy, that have to do with biochipping, that have to do with terrorism erupting in cities around the world when these sleeper cells awake, that have to do with all sorts of things, you know, that could be on the horizon. Now, some people will say, well, how do we know he published this one in this particular time and that one then? In some cases, it's harder to prove the actual date of publication. In other cases, they're in copyrighted dated books well in advance of the events occurring. But as what I've told people, like with the 58 letter, I said, all you have to do is know for sure that this letter, let's say, has been up on my website for 2 years and they've had it for a while. Even that it's just been up there for 2 years, watch the events of the world as they unfold and see if this is going, if you're going to find these things in there. I'm hoping that we won't. You know, as I say in the film, my personal mission is to help prove the prophecies wrong, not to rejoice about them being right.
Yeah, yeah. But of the original prophecies, as I said before, are there any major ones that we've, I mean, there was a talk about a couple of civil wars in the U.S. and
right.
whatever, potentially.
You know, that's, you brought that one up, Barry, and it's a good one. I'll tell you why. When I first read that prophecy, I actually read that in 86 because he first had it in a document in 1981 where he talked about that France would be overrun and would fall to Islam and Paris would be burned down and things, that there'd be rioting and all this that would go on in Paris and the perpetrators would be some like kind of, you know, revolutionaries of the Islamic bent that would be in France. Well, in November of 2005, October, November, there were riots in Paris, and we know about it, thousands of cars were burned, all that, and it was a group of Islamic radicals that supposedly were at the heart of it. According to these prophecies, that's just the beginning of ultimate trouble for France and other European countries from, you know, Islamic fundamentalism. Now, as far as, you know, other prophecies and things to come, the civil wars that we were just talking about, when I first read that about two civil wars coming to America, I literally laughed because I thought, he's got to be kidding. We can't have civil war. We did that already.
Yeah, been there, done that, yeah.
Yeah, but no. It's I see too many things now that I'm not laughing about. And I'll tell you, some of them have to do with the pressures from illegal immigration, the rising up of people on the far right, the fundamentalist Christian political groups, government trying to usurp to me. There's many things that are now polarizing people here, and I think within 5 years, if we don't have two civil wars, at least one civil war, I'd be very surprised.
Ooh, that's a big call, Michael.
I could be wrong. I'm not the prophet here, but I, you know, I'm living here and I'm watching stuff, and you know, you get these little exponential bumps in different ways when something happens, and things show themselves to be a little less pretty than you'd like, and it's not out of the question. Whether it is that soon or not, I think we will eventually see the breakdown of this federal system here, which is highly corrupt, and you know, many things that are in those prophecies. There's things I don't want to see happen, like a catastrophe that befalls the North American continent that never before in recorded history has happened here. And you know, there's a lot of stuff. There's a San Francisco earthquake that they say is not a prophecy, it's a prediction. Meyer photographed it in 1978. They took him forward in time, and he took 11 photographs of it. You know, this stuff gets pretty far out.
Whoa. How far forward in time did he say?
Well, he wouldn't say when it was. And here's what happened. The investigators were sitting around the table in Switzerland with some of the other people, and they were talking about things, and this earthquake thing came up, and Billy said, "Oh, yeah, I saw the earthquake." And they said, "What are you talking about? You know, you saw the earthquake." So he went out of the room, came back with a little, you know, folder from Kodak, and opened it up, threw 11 photographs on the table, and they got passed around. And what Wendell Stevens said was, here were 11 photographs. They weren't paintings. They weren't drawings. They were very clearly the city of San Francisco, taken from different angles, in you know, great deal of destruction, smokes and fire, buildings tilted and falling, and things on the ground. The Transamerica building's pyramidal top was cracked. And he said, we're trying to figure out, how can we date this? How can we figure this out? And he said the only thing that he noticed was, that really stood out, when they could see photos of cars on the streets, unlike the cars of the day, 1978, he said, these cars were generally rounder in shape, with much more glass in the windshields, sweeping up more into the roofs of the cars, and I didn't see external protuberances for rear view mirrors. So I thought, well, he must be dreaming, because cars have rear view mirrors. And then a couple years ago, someone forwarded me the first of several concept cars that I've seen where they don't have the rearview mirrors. The cars are rounder, the glass is extending, and they're using cameras to show the, you know, pick up behind the car and displaying it on the screen. So Mercedes did that, Toyota. There's other companies that I'm sure have it already in development. So if you want to figure out when the San Francisco earthquake occurs, if that's true, when cars are on the streets in, you know, and not having rearview mirrors, you might want to move inland a little bit if you're living in San Francisco.
You don't live in San Francisco, do you?
No, I live in Los Angeles. I'm equally stupid.
You're still on the San Andreas Fault, aren't you?
Yeah, and on the coast. So.
And oh yes, because there's been a lot of predictions about mass earthquakes in your whole area there.
You know, when I was just in Switzerland last, I said to Billy, I was talking to him because I wanted to know, there is an earthquake and a tsunami that will hit the northwest up off the coast of Seattle and Portland and all that. And they had published that information, and scientists had independently then published almost exactly the same prediction. A 9.0 that runs for 5 minutes generates a tsunami, you know, huge kind of thing. So I was talking to Billy. I said, well, are we going to, you know, so is that going to cause the big one down there? And he says, no, no. The big one that you're talking about, that when that happens, he says, both you and I will have our little angel wings by that time. Meaning, it's still far enough in the future. He says, however, there's going to be quite a bit of earthquake activity, including California and other places.
Okay, so I would imagine right now the people who might be listening to us from the San Francisco Tourist Bureau, the LA Tourist Bureau, are really impressed with you, Michael.
Yeah, I'm not getting too many. And I'll tell you something. I love San Francisco. I think it's a super beautiful city.
Yeah.
You know, if I could get up there more frequently, I would. As long as those cars still have rearview mirrors, I'm going to San Francisco.
Fair enough. So what's the impression that you get, just to, because, you know, we can take this in so many different directions, but what's the impression that you get talking with Billy, your association with him over, how many years is it now?
10 years.
10 years, okay. What impression do you get of where are we going? Does he give us, I mean, that's a pretty broad question, I realize that, but are we going into an area like the demarcation point of 2012 where we're moving into a new epoch, or are we going from disaster to disaster, or can you sort of put any kind of handle on it?
It may be all of the above. 2012, as it's laid out, I have an article that he had a conversation with one of the ETs about it, and basically they said we're kind of misunderstanding. First of all, the only reason the Mayan calendar ended there is the Mayans kind of got wiped out, and they didn't have time to make another calendar.
I haven't heard that one before. That's a good one.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we're starving to death, and we're, you know, there's no water, and they went through periods of cannibalization, all sorts of grim stuff. It's not like they, you know, went into the fourth dimension.
Well, I heard a very interesting theory on that they actually were interdimensional travelers, and they did disappear into another dimension. I thought, oh, that's an interesting theory.
I've heard that too, but I wouldn't put too much on that, because the evidence that, you know, I am partial to the information in the Meyer case, clearly, for a simple reason. Their foundation of credibility in their information over the past 6-7 decades is impeccable. Scientific stuff that they publish before it happens and is discovered.
Sure.
This is the reason. See, for me, the reason that they put out a lot of these things is to give us a body of material that we could then go through to determine how credible these people either are or are not. I am saying they come up enormously credible. So when they say the Mayan history is thus and so, they went through this period, they've had twice in their history that they had these brutal famines, they had to resort to cannibalism, there were droughts and this and that, so they really just got exterminated from conditions and migrated away. It was nothing mystical, like, oh, let's go to the fourth dimension, you know. Oh, that's a good idea. Why didn't we think about that before? So, you know.
Train leaving in 10 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, right. Oh, where'd you go? Oh, he went before you. You know, he just disappeared. But what they said is, yes, the Earth is going to appear to be sitting nestled in the Milky Way at a certain point, and, you know, December 21st, 2012, what have you. But there's also going to be the culmination of severe solar storms, so electricity, electrical grid, a lot of things can go wrong from that. Plus, we're going to have more and more trouble with ozone-related damage, cancers, and what have you, because we've so damaged the environment. Most of the coming trouble that they have been forewarning is environmental. Let's remember, Meyer first warned of climate change in 51, specifically wrote about global warming in 58, and ever since. And, you know, the melting of glaciers and all this stuff, it's not really just a bunch of New Age nonsense. It's opposed, of course, by corporate, you know, parties that have a vested interest in having us pump out and consume more of this and that and be irresponsible. But we're in a deep hole, and there's good news and bad news to everything, but still a lot of it depends on how many people will deliberately wake up and start intending to make a positive change and take responsibility.
I think that's a pretty good attitude, isn't it? Taking responsibility, first of all, for ourselves and our actions, and then...
Core of the case. You just hit it, Barry.
Yeah.
You've just expressed exactly what the very core teaching is, why these people have come. Yes, there's more to it, but that's what you've just said is the core of it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Michael, thank you for your time. Thank you for expanding on the wonderful information we're getting through Billy Meyer. And keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. I hope people will visit our website at theyfly.com. And please, the Billy Meyer story, UFOs and Prophecies from Outer Space, is the new film if you don't have it. And we invite you all to join in.
Yeah, the new one. I watched it before our chat, and it's a fascinating DVD. Can you get it through your website?
You can get it through my website at theyfly.com. Through Reality Entertainment. It'll be in stores all over the place, too. I think this week is the official launch of it that should be going into stores and what have you.
Right, okay. So, coming to a DVD store near you.
Hopefully so.
Michael, good to talk to you.
Thank you, Barry, very much. We'll be right back.
I suggest you go to the website, have a look for yourself. Check out some of the prophecies. Check out Billy Meyer. Do it with an open mind, though. Well, that's it for this week. Thanks a lot for your company. Hopefully I'll be able to talk to Ian Rossborough in the next week or two, but otherwise, there are fascinating guests out there just lining up to appear on radio out there. That's what I like to think anyway. Have a good week. See you next week.